Comrade, great. Obulela motho ono re dintho tsena tan before tshwantse di be at least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Or some refuse. I didn't refuse it. We are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, my shiva refused. Then that point's okay. Then that point's okay. No, no, strawberry for me. Strawberry for me. Chocolate is for ladies. Thank you, Gracie.
Thank you. And the other one?
The other one, I don't know whose was this one. The sugar, don't have your meeting there. Thank you. We were just about to start with the presentation for the school sport. And that part of the school sport is exciting to everybody. It's a pity that we were marking time so that at least the South African Football Association must arrive. But doesn't matter, then it's okay. And then we'll give over to Mr. Nesengani to present to us and talk to the budget. But over to you, sir. Thank you very much for coming, and then thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sukan, Unantika Mackenzie has got an important announcement to make. Shilowa has won the case.
Oh,
yes. Legacy project.
Bani and all those other things. And then so that the kids must be in a position to track you when you want to. Thank you.
Okay.
My name is Andy Nesengane. I'm the MD of the ATCA Pty Ltd. We are the friends of the school. And all the school kind of sporting codes, we have befriended them. And one of the things that have been hamstrung us is the fact that now if you look at the facilities at school, particularly in the previously disadvantaged communities, they are virtually non-existent. And I wonder, Comrade Chair, as to whether how we actually negotiated a new dispensation when that aspect was not topped in the agenda. The people that are actually successful, either in education and those that actually control 87% of the stock exchange, they tended to know this thing, to say, you link education with sport. There's an element of discipline that comes with sport. And when a student comes to class, discipline and authority is not foreign. It becomes something easy to actually play by. Now, if you were to actually follow the mood of this committee today, you could actually attest also, and they would testament to the fact that now it is money. And also the fact that now there's been kind of a little oversight in terms of money, and it's only spending. We came with a different agenda. We're not spending money. Probably the only organization that has got that kind of agenda. We employ capital. We stretch the rent, so to speak. And by doing that, we actually preserve what we've got. Okay? And if you go to my notes, you realize that now there was a recent windfall that came through us having hosted the World Cup. One thing for sure that I can attest and tell you and promise you today is that the World Cup is not coming anytime soon. Probably in our lifetime. And that windfall, as it has been stated and bandied around, is that that windfall is there for legacy projects. In my small interpretation, I had conjured that legacy is something that is not ending, doesn't end. You know, if we to follow the history of the cathedral church, the biggest cathedral church that has actually been built in Rome, with about 1,000 churches outside, you know, I was actually amazed when I actually read the history, how it was actually built. When the forefathers were actually building or digging trenches, they were commissioning other fathers or other workers to go to the field to plant trees. And those trees were actually envisaged to be trusses. And you and I, we know for a fact that a tree actually takes something like 100 years to mature. So where have you seen such kind of a foresight where you dig trenches and you go to the field to prepare, you know, for the roof trusses? Like I said in the beginning, that leaders do not belong to self, leaders do not belong to the family, but leaders belong to a generation. So in the greater scheme of things, leaders actually affect changes. Okay. Now, if you have to look at this windfall, with that background in mind, is that this money must not come to an end. That is why I'm seeking a lot of support and I'm drumming up prayers to affect and probably even influence how money is actually utilized in as far as that is actually concerned. So now, if you look at the sporting in soccer, which happened to be the most patronized sport in all the sporting courts in South Africa, basically because of where we're coming from, yet there's a paradox that the schools are not adequately resourced when it comes to soccer. Facilities in townships are horrendous or non-existent. Therefore, there's not even pride, you know. And that is why in some of the newspapers you see kids drinking alcohol and some stabbing teachers because there's just no kind of, adherence to any sporting code, you know. Where facilities exist, there's no maintenance. You know, as you know, as a government, we are very quick and very, very good in building stuff, but in terms of maintaining, it's another matter altogether. So in a nutshell, as I've defined leadership, you are sort of endowed with actually looking after a generation. You know, we are failing our people, you know. Our people are actually shortchanged in a way, you know, having to be subjected to such abject conditions. Now, if you have to look at the utilization of some of the money, and I'm talking about the Lotto. The Lotto has actually given SAFA about 171 million as part of the legacy project. And so far, and that this is according to their annual report, they are talking of about 27 AstroTurf facilities. 27, you know, with 20 so far.
Completed one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And even they are saying the allocation is for 52.
Mm-hmm.
54.
52.
52.
Mm.
That is okay. Then the complete one, 27.
Yeah. According to the annual report, they say 27 completed. Yeah, the target is about 52. Mm-hmm. And from other sources, we heard they've only completed about 6. Obviously, the project is to run over 3 years. And like I said, 52 is actually envisaged to be built in each of the SAFA region. And some of the things that are actually been thrown around is like there's going to be computer training, you know, life skill programming. I've got a problem with the computer training in the sense that there are actually other, you know, sort of institution that are actually doing that. And I thought we should actually hone into our area of specialties, you know. And then I actually came with a very, 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 very revolutionary model, you know, for school facilities and maintenance, you know. And I've spoken with the F&B, I've actually spoken with APSA. The model has been tested, you know. At some point I was sitting with something like 7 CEOs from investment strategists, from investment specialists, and it actually came top. Mm-hmm. Creation of about 1,200 jobs, which we actually need, and about 180 permanent jobs in the next 5 years. And of course, with a permanent team for facility management. Now, I want you to skip that, and let's go to a, where there's a graphic illustration. Maybe I should. Graphic illustration, page 9. This is how the model works. We are saying to SAFA, SAFA commit to us, you know, 250 million. We put that money, you know, we commit it to an asset management kind of portfolio. We chose APSA because, you know, it's their major sponsor, but we are not really, really, really forced to go that route. Uh-huh. And from the capital amount, we said the capital would be preserved. Okay, if it's 250, we're going to preserve that capital, and we're going to have to give you back that money in 5 years' time. 5 years' time, we give you the face value, and then the interest. We're going to use the interest to build the soccer facilities or the sporting facilities. 60 of those in 5 years, within 5 years. And then if it's 500 million, we're talking about 120 of those. Now, let me just explain what is it that we're actually offering. And this is where it's very interesting. the kind of package that we actually offer. We've done it in some of the schools, and page 20, okay? Okay. Yeah. Now, in terms of our model, is that 200 million will net about 150 multi-purpose facilities, with football as an anchoring sporting code. Let me just elaborate. When we talk of the facilities, these are the things that we're talking about. I'm talking about this.
I always have outright to request to people that Mackenzie is more intelligent than me.
Mm.
I'm this person who has to take a little bit time before I grasp. He said 150 million.
Mm-hmm. No, 200 million.
200 million.
That's cash.
Takes about how many facilities?
We will build about 150.
That's what I want to
say.
250?
No, 200 million will give us about 150.
200 million.
Mm. Okay. Now, if you look at what it is that we're talking about,
yeah.
We're talking of a soccer field with a full athletic track, 100 meters. We're talking of a long jump. We're talking of a change room with about 132 square meters with a sportsmaster office. We're talking of the tennis court that will double up as a netball. We're talking of long jump. We're talking of even a volleyball court. We're talking of short put, you know. We're talking of the, what is this? Well, the cricket is actually optional, you know, depending, of course, on the size of the land. Okay. We are also installing some flag poles. As you know, that there is this allegiance, we swear to allegiance. That actually goes with that. Now, what actually worries us is that if you look in Gauteng, for instance, Barbara is actually rolling out the installing of the palisade fencing. You know, already, I think 100 schools have already benefited. You know, and now what we actually say is that if we can tie this thing up, you know, one, it reduces the cost, and two, we are rolling out something together. You know, for convenience and of course economies of scale. Okay. I went to a school in Naledi, and I was really, really shocked that in an attempt to reduce cost, what they're doing is like they reduce the size of land, of the school land, you know, so that now the palisade only cover the, you know, the boundaries of the school only, and the rest is actually considered. The rest of the land is actually considered to the element. That's where you find the dumping. That's where this morning you find people building churches, squatter camp, and on school grounds. You look for any sport facility there, there's nothing. And this thing is happening when there's an organization like this. It's happening when there are people that profess to be the custodian of soccer, custodian of sport in schools. It's an indictment, you know. The project is actually running over 5 years, and like I said in the beginning, the maintenance plan is actually built into the pricing. Mm-hmm. What is much more interesting is the fact that now, Comrade Chair, you'll be very busy, because every 4 weeks we'll be handing a speech, a facility. Every point. And that is with 250 mil over 5 years. You know. So if it's 500 mil, we're talking about two pitches or two facilities every fourth week. Nice is that the maintenance. It's like when you buy a BMW, there's a maintenance plan. So with these facilities, we're talking of maintenance over a period of 5 years. Yeah. The part two is the one that I'll just give you a synopsis. You know, we have roped in the soccer legends. You know, the soccer legend, the soccer masters. We don't care. What we have done is like we roped them both, so that each and every school must actually have at least one of the legends. You know, and that particular person will double as the facility managers. We've spoken with Drake and Skark, who are the facility management company, in terms of training. You know, that's why as we talk of sustainability
projects. Again, he's selling this product to Suka.
So everybody's involved. Everybody is back to school. The school governing body, wherein within this body, we're going to have what you call an aesthetic committee. You know, because you find that some of the functions of actually looking after the school and everything like that are not actually entertained. You know, basically because there's no structure. You know? Now we put a structure in the school governing body. That sometimes the school governing body would actually have to convene for the sole purpose of sport. Okay. And what we have actually done is that we envisage that once we do this, for every rand that we actually spend conservatively, we're going to attract at least 8 bucks in the sense that other sporting codes will be involved, cricket will be involved, rugby will actually be involved. You know, they just need someone to start this thing. That's why soccer is like an anchoring component here. And of course, the Department of Education plays a very, very, very important role. And what we've also done is we have roped in some of the institutions, for instance, RAO, where they do sports management, that they in turn, you know, could actually come and do their practicals and whatever, you know, in schools. But then if there's no facilities, that becomes actually a problem. Okay. I'm going back and forth. Okay, let me just then explain, and I'll attempt to actually explain this in page 6. I've just shown you the model how it actually works in terms of graphically, but the explanation is this, is that we sort of take it for granted that we're going to get that money, the fund of $250 million. Of course, the purpose of this is to achieve the constitutional mandate of FIFA to provide for the legacy project for all South Africans. ADCA will invest the funding in a fixed investment vehicle with an attractive interest income, a guaranteed return of nominal value of the funding at maturity of the investment term. That's exactly what I'm actually saying. You give me $20 in 5 years, I'll give you $20. But we have actually gone a step up, that we will protect that money, you know, for inflation. If we're taking the money, say, every month, for, let's say, for a year, we'll leave the last 2 months, you know, and we concede that to the funder. Okay? We'll take for 10 months, and on the 11 and 12 months, that goes back to the funder. That, in itself, actually protects the value, the time value of money. Okay. Of course, we have mentioned that the coupon from the investment will be employed to finance the mini stadium or soccer pitches for the underprivileged school. The guaranteed kind of component, this is where it actually gets interesting, is that this money that has actually been entrusted into this asset management still reflects in the balance sheet of SAFA, because that's their money. It's not gone. You know. Say, for instance, there's maybe a need to go into a capital project of some kind. They could actually go and raise money on the back of the guarantees. You can see. So this money is actually being utilized in three fronts. It's a coupon, semi-annual coupon, which actually bear interest. And the capital amount becomes a guarantee, which, by the way, because of its liquidity, the bank are actually prepared to actually give loan at preferential rates, even 2%, so to speak. So that money... some will say that money will be there until Jesus Christ comes if it's actually employed in this way. You know, and to me, it's very, very important that it becomes a basic, you know, a basis for financial kind of wealth, because we've seen in the previous years that SAFA has actually been battling sometimes to actually have money, even to pay staff. You know. When you've got that kind of money, there's no way that you could actually go and borrow money again. You know, but it needs to be utilized in a very, you know, wise way. You know, and all that I've actually been hearing is spend, as if it's a bottomless pit where you actually get money. So now it's time to actually employ some wisdom. You know. I am coming here with the full support of some of the regional soccer federations who by no means would have loved to be here, but they actually support this thing. They support this thing. This is the same model that we have actually applied. That's why I gave an example on page 8. That you can actually grow. This is the same model that we have actually applied and in human settlement. And it's actually working very well so far.
rest the case.
I rest my case.
When the terrorist is around, I just have the fire pump when the terrorist is around.
We're going to take clarity. But Prof and Sister Lulu, I'm going to give you an opportunity for interaction on the clarity and the input on this matter. It's a little bit of a high finance level technical thing. But we will try our best. The first thing that at least it's not sugar this time, starting with the Congress of the People, Mackenzie, it's you, and then I'll close. You take the banner, and then I'll close.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation, Mr. Masingani. I don't want to sound negative at the beginning, but whenever people make big promises and big money, I get a little bit nervous, and I think that I think we need to, without in any way detracting from someone who's trying to make things happen, I think there need to be some hard questions asked. Firstly, who are the directors of ATKA? Need to know that. The obvious question, if it was this simple, is that why can't SAFA do it themselves? Why wouldn't they just do it themselves and stop a middle person acting as a broker or something even bigger? The next point I want to ask is that who owns the construction company of these facilities that are going to be constructed? And who holds title on those assets at these facilities? Are there leases in place with the schools or with the municipalities or the Department of Education or Public Works, whatever the case might be? Is this organization currently in competition with the firm that's currently got the footprint for the first 27 units? In other words, are you in competition with them? Are you linked to them? What is the status there? All right, then just getting back to the practical issues. How much does each facility cost as you described? That's with a 400-meter track, the full field, the shot put, the athletics, the football, cricket component and everything. Yeah, okay. The rural areas, are they part of this program, i.e. KZN and the Eastern Cape? Now, if we can just get back to money. When I look at something of 250 million, or let's just take 200 million to make it easy, if you're going to get interest at 6% in my book, that's going to raise something like 12 million rand. Per annum, which is in turn taxed. It's not tax-free, it's taxed. So by the time you reduce the 12 down to less tax at 35 or 40%, whatever the case is, now we're not talking 12, we're talking maybe 6 or 7 million. Have you taken that into account? And my last question, without going into any of the details, because there's an old saying that I believe in, that if it sounds too good to be true, it normally is. Now, I'm not suggesting that yours is not above board, but it seems quite incredible that you can roll out all these every 4 weeks and still have your capital back. Further, I don't know of any bank that allow you to use the capital sum for 3 different projects at one time, as you stated that you could, the utilization of capital. So, Mr. Chairman, without going into too many other details, I think we need some answers on those key issues. Obviously, it's SAFA's money, but I can tell you, gentlemen, from this committee, and we debated it last year, is that SAFA are only too aware of the social responsibility, legal and moral, that they have to the people of South Africa regarding these funds and to the growth of football. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody? Prof? Thank you, Chair. I think for me, I would like to start off in SAFA's absence, just to check whether there was consultation with SAFA National on this project, and then two, to see that the facilities are going to involve a number of codes. So was there consultation with these other sports federations who is intended to use the facilities? And three, which is important, as a national department, regardless of whether it's in school or in communities, there's a policy document, the National Norms and Standards for Sport Facilities. Has that been taken into account? And the last question links up with what Mr. McKenzie's question, and that is, if these facilities are built in, of course there's a need for them, and it's admirable that there can be a potential solution to the backlog of facilities, particularly in schools in disadvantaged areas. Who becomes the custodian of those facilities? And my question here relates specifically to the responsibility to maintain those facilities, because it's fine to develop it, to donate it, and to have ownership in some place, but who is then responsible to maintain these facilities is my concern. And then in relation to our minister's idea of a rollout, which must still be discussed with the Department of Basic Education, the concept of satellite schools, so that schools are resourced on a satellite model where they will serve a particular jurisdiction with a certain number of schools. So it's not every school will have equal facilities, but that there would be some schools that would be resourced and they would share with schools in the nearby area. That's a concept that the minister has proposed. So how does this address those issues? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. You can back point.
Well, in
terms of the money, maybe I should actually start there. It's very possible. One, you're not using a bank. You know, we're using an asset management kind of tool. The issue of 6% is highly negotiable. You know, it's actually highly negotiable because experience has actually taught us that if you give an asset manager $1, he's going to make $8. If he doesn't make that kind of money, he get fired. That's the minimum.
I can understand what your statement is so extreme. Mm-hmm. What you said, we'll invest funding in a fixed investment.
Mm-hmm.
That's different to what you said.
It's a fixed guarantee income investment. It's a guarantee income investment that is not actually affected. That is actually negotiable. Yeah, it's actually negotiable. And to tie up the money in a three-prong, a two-prong, you know, approach is very, very possible. Remember, in the capital investment, you've got this money that is sitting on the pot, and we are committing the interest portion. Okay, when we commit the interest portion, we're not impacting on the capital amount. So, on the capital amount, you could actually commit it further. By actually going to an open market and ask for loans.
people have actually borrowed money against their investment. That's what we're actually saying. You know, in case of the unlikely event where SAFA is going to really require huge capital injection, they could actually do that. Okay. It is big money, but it's actually released in chunks. You know, this money still belongs to APSA. To SAFA, sorry. It belongs to SAFA. It's not our money. It's not the government money. That money is actually in the book. That's why it reflects in the asset. You know. So, but it's manageable because every month we're talking about 1.5 million, 3 million. If it's 500,000, 500 million, we're talking about 3 million every month. 250, we're talking about 1.5 million every month. So it's actually manageable. And the fact that now you are delivering a school every fourth week, that becomes a management tool. So if you fail to actually do that, it's easy to actually have remedial action. Okay? And it is actually possible. We have done some shoe school on that. All that we do is earth moving. You know, where there's a soil embankment, that then we cut and we actually use that as a grandstand. The other thing that I need to clarify here is that we came here to give the Sport and Recreation Committee an option so that when you are actually confronted with issues, you could actually have an option. So why don't you actually go this route? It's just to empower, you know. As to our interest, we do actually have a construction company, by the way. We do actually have a construction company that is diversely, you know, compiled. And that is why the costs are so low. Having said that, SAFA is not actually bound to actually go with us. That is why the first presentation was actually done to Kirsten. It was done to Shu. They will never claim not to know this. You know, it was actually done. So why I'm divesting this thing is that if you're going to talk about it, if somebody's going to talk about it, you could see that there is wisdom in the deployment of money. You know, what I've actually been seeing is not wisdom. How do you actually have 52 tough, or what do you call Afro tough, having spent 171 million? And that money is gone. It is actually gone. You know, and we're talking of money that will be hitting on the interest. You still got the money. In 5 year time, you get your money. That money, every month or every year, it actually reflects on the SAFA balance sheet. Okay? Why does SAFA don't actually do it itself? This actually was a molded presentation. It was aimed for SAFA. We went to SAFA. They gave us even the option to say, look, if you want us to do this, we'll rather talk with APSA, because APSA are the chief sponsor. We said, no, that's fine. Let's do it. You know. But again, we don't want to release the wisdom to the few. We want to release the wisdom to the broader mass to see this can actually be achieved. I don't know if you guys have actually been watching SABC today, this morning. Mm-hmm. You know. These things are actually raising their ugly head. People were actually marching towards SAFA, demanding, but fortunately I'm here. Otherwise, I'll be accused of it. You know, they're demanding for school, better infrastructure, better this, because everybody knows that there is a windfall that is actually sitting in the coffers of SAFA. You know. As I speak, they've been, you know, committees after committees being actually formed, you know, and as a matter of fact, SAFA has actually been seconded an infrastructure development specialist, Karim, you know, who actually is actually working with me. What's the other question? Okay. Now, the other issue is about, is there a competition? Yes, there's competition. There's competition in the sense that now the company that is actually being engaged and employed by SAFA is busy with the AstroTurf. Okay? But we chose a gap. See, it's
not every school that wants AstroTurf. AstroTurf has got its own disadvantages. One is not environmentally friendly. There's some bands that are only peculiar with AstroTurf. And if there's plenty of water and, you know, and the region is not as arid, why go the AstroTurf? All that we want just a simple KU. We don't, you know, my kids actually practice in the so-called Model C school. It's a KU. It's about 120 to actually lay that. Maintenance is very, very, very cheap. You know, so that's exactly what we want to stretch this thing. We want 11 sporting codes with this 1.5 million. If they're doing the AstroTurf, we're not into that space. That's their space. Okay. What's the other thing? And the other thing is, like, our model, this is not a Coca-Cola kind of, you know, recipe. Our model is easily, repeated or replicated. Very, very easy. If we do something in fact, some other organization can do the very same thing. If we do something in Gauteng, something, so similar thing will be done in KwaZulu-Natal. You know, it's very, very easily kind of replicable. Okay? And then, yes. And then, I'm sure I've answered all your questions. Well, I don't have the breakdown, but I can just, off the top of my head, I've just mentioned, you know, laying of the grass, we're talking about 120,000. We're talking about the building of the 132 square meter change room. It's not more than 200,000. We're talking about, I just got quotes now for tennis court, because we didn't actually involve that, you know. The court is less than 300,000, you know. And the athletic tracks, you don't have to cost it. All that you have to have ash, you know, you just mark, you know, on the field, you know. The other cost will be in terms of the volleyball, where we've got also this the silk cover in case it's actual rain and stuff like that. We're talking about 40,000 rand, you know. The cost has been kept to the bare minimum. Yeah. And how this company actually constituted and reconstituted is that for each and every school where we actually go, that's why the school governing board is actually involved, is that it's local people that actually work, that do the work. You know, 6 months before we actually even go there, already that structure has actually been put in place. So it's not like a permanent, okay. The director is myself and him and other two women with the sole director. I think rural areas, yes, exactly the point. See, this thing is easily, you know, it can be replicated. It doesn't have to be us. All that we can do is perhaps maybe even to pass the knowledge, you know. The knowledge is very, very easy to replicate this thing, you know. The maintenance, if the honorable member was actually listening, we said there's a second part. There's an attempt that we actually did where we have actually teamed up with some of the legends, you know, wherein we try to, you see, you can train kids for soccer for so much in a week. What you do, you know, with the time that you have by yourself, what do you actually do? So we have tried to incorporate an element of facility management, you know, to actually train the soccer legends, because soccer will be the anchoring kind of sporting code in all these facilities. So there's an organization, as you know, the masters and legends, but we're talking with both. The guy that is representing the legends is through Pauline Lanya, John Mwiti, and even the Dr. Komaldo of this world. So that part becomes the part two in terms of the sustainability, in terms of when these things are built, and maybe 5 years actually gone by, how do we then actually have to employ these people, you know, on full-time basis? Where do they get sort of absorbed, you know? That is the part two. That is where we're actually busy working with the Department of Education. Okay.
proof.
Okay.
Are you fine, Prof?
Just one area, and that is the norms and standards.
Thank you.
Expansion on that?
No, you see, they. When you get an iron, that iron is got the SADS.
Yes.
Zero of standard.
That's right. That's right.
And that is the standard of that the I. Now, this facility that you're talking about.
Who makes the standard? What are the standards
Of those? Okay. Now the standard will actually differ because as you can see, we've got like about 8, 9 sporting codes. And I think we're going to actually have to subscribe to all those. What is actually different is on the soccer pitch, where at first our cost was shooting up to about 2.5 million, because now we needed to use a seed, you know, a seed, what do you call it, seeded kind of grass. And coming to realize that, now, by the way, these are not professional kind of players. In fact, KU is just as good. Then our standard then sort of deviated from the FIFA kind of requirement, you know. That is the only thing that we actually have deviated.
Prof, you can pursue your answer. Thank you, Chair. I was referring to specifically the department's norms and standards for facilities, all sports facilities in this country. And that is a policy document where it has, it's not a FIFA standard, it's not an outside exposed standard, it's the standards of this government for sport and recreation facilities in this country. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. I understand what you're talking about. That's why on page 4 we say the stakeholders, because this is where we actually get the input from. The organizing committee, the SAFA, the private sector, SAFA, local and sports provincial authorities. So by the time this thing is actually unveiled, all those kind of stakeholders, by the way, some of them are busy engaged, would have actually been on board.
No, that's good. But we just want to raise this thing with you so that at least you begin to work on it.
Wonderful.
You see, when it comes to sports and recreation, there are norms and standards set by the Department of Sports and Recreation. Say, when you call something a basic facility must have 1, 2, 3, 4. A basic facility, its standard should be so many square meters and this and this and this and this and this. And if you go lesser than that, then doesn't meet the norms and standards of a country. And then if you go bigger than that, then it goes to another level of the norms and standards, and then you put it to a category that is above what you call a basic facility. But the SAFA and all other stakeholders would not put the other parameters of their own outside the normal policy parameters of government around a basic facility or the norms and standards around the facilities. So I think it would be ideal for you that they approach the Department of Sports and Recreation and say, what are the norms and standards of the facilities, the categories of the facilities that you talk? Then they'll give you category 1 is a basic facility, category 2 is this kind of facility, and then category 3 is a fully fledged facility next to Orlando Stadium or that kind of thing. Then they'll be able to give you the norms and standards and all that. And they would even make reference to these norms and standards that they were putting are a norms and standard required by the FIFA or whatever for evacuation, for emergency, for medical, and all those other things. But they are drawn out of our own policy framework. That's the other thing is that I want to nor from you. In building these facilities, have you interacted with, because these things are going to be at the municipalities, we would say to Professor Singh and the lady there, go and get money from lottery, about 250 million. Take that money, invest it there with those people. But as soon as that happens, you go to a municipality to go and put a facility. Then the IDP of the municipality do not talk to that kind of a facility, ideal situation that you want. And it will be very important that you begin to start with the metros and other, because the ideal situation of a school is say, who would like a facility to be there? But the plan for a local authority doesn't agree that a facility should be there. They say there should be a clinic, a facility must be a kilometer down the line. So those kind of things, it will be important that you interact with municipalities and check what are the IDPs of this municipality saying in around the issues of facility. We can agree, which we will encourage, that we see how best we can exploit this. And the number of facilities that you have an ambition to deliver after every 4 weeks will not be achieved, because something that you are going to get in municipalities are going to be completely different from the ambition of making those facilities to be available at that time, because some municipalities in their IDPs do not even have a piece of a view of about a basic facility for sport. So I think it will help you. Because you see, why am I saying that? It's because when we said lottery must give us 250 million, and then you sign with the department to deliver those facilities in a time that you say, then it's going to have unintended consequences. When you don't do that, and then you come and say, the problems of municipalities are the IDPs, and definitely you're going to get those issues of the IDPs as problems in municipalities. So I'm just putting, sensitizing you to what we say. I think you know, but I haven't heard you exactly when you talk about this facility that has all these other things. At 200 square meter, the 200 square meter probably, or 400. When? What is the cost of that facility? Apart from, I see here, the calculations that you've just given, it's about 640,000. Because you talk about 200 plus or 200,000 plus or minus 300,000 plus or minus 120, and then roughly gives me, and the other one is at about, 40. Yes, it gives me about 640,000 roughly. Now, I just want to check in reality, a basic facility, in your view, not the basic facility, the norms and standards of a department, in these norms and standards that you're talking about, having all these other things in place, tennis court, volleyball, and all the long jump and all that, what is the cost for that facility?
Thank you, Chief. What is actually happening, we did what you call an economies of scale. Of course, if you look, places are all the same. Some you find hard rock, then you actually have to drill the place.
Mm.
Some is actually soft. But the cost can actually be absorbed if you've got a pool of, say, 10 fields that you actually do. So we did an exercise, and the average cost was about 1.6 million. Was about because what we're doing is just earth moving, you know. We do a lot of earth moving, you know. Some of the ground actually sunken down, because the other cause that you actually ask is the drainage. which is very, very costly. Laying of the irrigation, you know, and those kind of stuff. So that's where the cost is actually coming from. But on average, 1.6 million. Million.
Okay.
So you actually have, you know, the 9 or 10 spotting codes. Okay. And the other thing of the IDP, yes, fortunately, SAFA has actually given us Mr. Karim,
yeah,
who has actually been working with the municipalities. But having said that, it's already the ground that we're talking about, are grounds that are already in school. Okay. But he's got sort of an enormous knowledge. Yeah.
Karim is working tirelessly around this.
Yeah.
He was presenting sometimes last week on this, the 2010 legacies to the portfolio committee. But my last question to you, say, it's around this facility for 5 years. It's got the service plan. Just like the car that I don't drive, the BMW. It's got a service plan. What happens after 5 years?
That is the part two. That is the part two that we are actually busy negotiating with the Department of Education. You know, there's been, you know, sort of eruption about there that we cannot actually absorb this. It's an extra head, and so we are actually busy, you know.
Yeah. Let's just be wild. After 5 years, what is the minimum cost of maintenance of this? I am saying this to you because we have what you call the municipal infrastructure grant, and there is a percentage of about, is it 5%, 6% for the maintenance of the facility. Now, I want to check to you, in real monetary terms, after 5 years, what could this facility cost the owners of the facility after that? Because, you see, I like your honesty. Painful, your honesty is painful. When you drive a BMW, it's not a car, that thing. Anybody will never tell you that a BMW is a car. I know it's not a car. When you drive a BMW, no, it's driving something. When you drive a BMW, and then a motor plane after 150,000 kilometers goes off, and 3 years, and the service that you pay out of your pocket, not anything less than 8,000 rand. Not anything less than 8,000 rand a month. Now, that is the cost that you are going to incur in an event. You still stuck with the car, and then you don't change it, so that at least you must weigh, you must fly in the wave of the free maintenance that is there. Now, in this instance, the reality of the situation that this kind of a very nice, splendid facility of this nature, your knowledge, roughly, how much is the maintenance of this facility? Minimum.
Okay. Now, this is what we do, just to answer you. This is what we did. We did a rough kind of working to say, look, let's say there are 10 schools in Soweto. We don't actually equip each and every school with, for instance, grass cutter and. We've got our central depot, you know, wherein Monday they're going to do two schools. Tuesday, just like that. So we cluster them in tens and tens and tens. Okay. So now, when we look at the cost of actually maintaining our equipment and also for the payroll of three people, we're talking minimum about 30,000 rand per school. You know, that roughly it is, you know.
Minimum
30,000.
That's minimum 30,000 for a rural school to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is this real? Let's take the word.
No, but you look at the world, we're still listening. We want to ask questions.
No, but everybody has contributed. And then we were contributing. Why not have impressions like that?
I must say that I am impressed by this presentation by Atka. But I think surely we as the committee will have to dissect it as we are doing some putting some clarity questions from the two gentlemen. Especially when the honorable member McKenzie has raised fundamental questions for us. I'm sure he stole our minds, you know, in those questions. But, Chairperson, I just wanted to check, because I am getting also an impression that they need to talk to the real line function department, sport and recreation as a department. So that because there are many people who are interested in sports and overlapping the role, unconsciously taking over the role and responsibility of other stakeholders. Besides, the Department of Sports and Recreation is there, but also in terms of the infrastructure, there is another department. So we need to have a kind of a synergy and coordination when we deal with these matters. Because it's not a straightforward thing. And the one client at the center are schools. So I'm saying we need to find a way of coordinating, because look, you might not be the first one to make such a presentation, especially when it comes to the infrastructure for schools. You know, so we need to find a way, how do we bring in all these presentations together so that we have one kind of a document that will channel the Department of Sports to be at the center, legally and constitutionally by their mandate to do that. I think those the critical questions that you have been raised here, even by our chairperson, I will not dive into that, but I would just advise to say maybe you need to take an extra mile to the department, you know, government department, so that we don't speak into citizens and servants, or as if there's a competition around the turf, and yet there's a good intention to get things happening. And also the question of the rural areas. I think that's where it matters most to us, you know, for me, because I am getting an impression in your presentation, it's more biased towards the urban areas and the big towns. And especially when you say there's some examples that you make, it gives me that you are focusing. Exactly. So we need to tilt the balance in the economy so that those rules must come much clearer than placing an emphasis, if you say Gauteng, and your scope will be around that one. Because also in your schools so that you identify, you need to get which areas of schools would you focus most. I understand Mr. McKenzie raised the question of the two provinces, KZN, Eastern Cape. We've got 9 provinces. Your priority areas, if you want to develop that, where would you start as a real point so that we see that you are really treating the balance? Because the disadvantaged communities are in the rural more than in the urban. I'm not saying urban are better off, especially the blacks in South Africa. So I just wanted to bring that dimension. The consultation with the department, the rural emphasis should be much more clearer, but surely the committee members might want to synthesize what you've said, especially when you talk figures, because the take-home from what is being said here, your 200 vis-a-vis the 6% and so on, your take-home as a person to yourself, for me, thing from the head, it will be around 18% if I'm looking at the projects that you are putting as milestones. So that you take. So from that you'll be doing. I'm also looking from that angle. So I'm saying we would want to synthesize more on what you said, maybe give a written response in due course. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. You want to respond?
Yeah, I just want to respond to this. I spend an enormous time in township. The benchmark has been the school in so-called Model C,
and this is the township. If you look at the traffic from Soweto to school in the morning, I can safely say it's actually 40%. That is when during school holiday you find that there's no traffic. School holiday, there's no traffic going to town. And if you look at the major attraction, you know, it's facilities. It's actually primarily facilities. You know, an example in place, if you look at Maponya Mall last year, it has recorded the highest kind of profit. Guess where? You know, exclusive books, right in Soweto. Edcom Group, right in Soweto. Why is that? Because somebody respected, you know, the consumers and built a world-class facilities, and they've exercised their vote with their feet. You know, so similarly, if you were to look at the school in Soweto, they're no different from rural areas. They're pathetic. You know, they're pathetic, so to speak. You know? And I'm saying, why not actually begin with where things could be easily, and you use the economies of scale and. You know, maybe somebody will come with a rural kind of development project, but my heart bleeds when you talk of Soweto, for instance, and you somehow there's a difference between a school in Soweto and a rural area. I've been to Dr. Kazamula School in Naledi. There was not even toilets that I actually work in. Hello? Right in Johannesburg. You see, no sporting field, nothing. In terms of sport, there is nothing. We have to start somewhere. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. I said to you, I've got the weakness of memory. When you started talking to us, you said to us, this matter is not a matter that it has started at this committee. It is a matter that you're discussing with everybody so that everybody that you talk about, this information is given to that particular person. That's what you said. Now, I agree with you. You have come to the right place, and then we are now saying to you the other right place, which is more relevant, is that Department of Sports and Recreation. And that Department of Sports and Recreation, you know what it's going to say to you? It's going to say, public assets belongs to the Department of Public Works and all those other things. And you know what does that mean? It means we as the Committee for Sports, we are afraid to make a decision and say to Dr. Singh, Dr. Singh, go and discuss with Lotto, get 250 million, but check at the viability of this. And then he said, we have not given it a big thought, and then come next week, we'll think properly about it. That's what we're saying to you. And I don't think that is exactly what I would say to you. I would say to you, the department is here, and this model that we're presenting has not been tested by technicals and other people who know, and the Department of Public Works, together with the National Treasury or probably some other people, would look at this kind of a vehicle that you're talking about. But outrightly to us, we're saying, it's not something that you have to go and sleep about. It is something that you say to the department, we will tell the minister in a cold face of their presentation, as a presentation that is going to make us to have facilities when we wake up tomorrow. It's good. So go and check whether how true it is what the McKenzie said, that when we give you 250 million and then 5 years down the line, still going to get that 250 million, there is nothing that you have lost, nothing, there's nothing at risk and all that. Check all those things and close all those gaps and say to these people, they must go and build a facility. But on top of that, be mindful of checking what are the cost implications of this grand facility after the motor plane collapse in 5 years. If there's any other thing that you can reduce that, do it so that at least it should not have some unintended consequences at the end, because we have this big heart of loving this facility to be there. That's all what we are saying to you. And I think that too, the department would go and lobby for a certain amount of money guaranteed from lottery. They will get it. and say, this money, you get it 5 years down the line. And they will not say it's at risk and all that, when all valves have been closed for the money not to be at risk, and then and come and build facilities for us. What we are talking about as this committee is facilities at all costs. It doesn't matter what it takes. But we're just sensitizing you on the IDPs and many of those things. But again, we must be mindful that we would wish to have a F&B stadium in Kroonstad, but is there capacity to can maintain the F&B stadium in Kroonstad? No such a capacity. The heart is big, but the real work and the finances are very small. So we're saying check with the department. The department will do that. It is correct that you must go to the department, but I am saying to you, that department is going to refer you to public works, because as soon as you have done that facility immediately belongs to public works. And therefore, it's a long chain of people, but one person has to take a decision. One person has to take a decision and say, this is a decision, and that decision will trigger all other decisions as we go up down there. Now, we're putting the same proposal to the Department of Courts and Recreation. Say, Prof, we think that this model is ideal. Doesn't have risk consequences in the cold phase of this, and we think for us to be able to meet facilities in this country, go and check this facility, National Treasury, whatever, people must be with you, and check the viability, and if it is solid, we would say to you, run with it, because it's going to assist us a lot. That's all what we're saying.
All that I have to do is just to present the technical.
Yes,
right on.
Yes.
To Prof.
Thank you. Thank you very much, sir. Yeah? Thank you for coming. And then we just breaking for tea, and then we're going to take Dr. Borat. Thank you for being part of the South African team of doctors for life. Is it Doctor for Life? The gift of the givers, yes. The gift of the givers to... I got your SMS that you're going to Libya and on that humanitarian crisis that is there. And then, but you're coming from another place also. Tell me, what is it? But how is the situation in Libya? Before you tell us, we want to hear from somebody who was there in Libya, the fan of Muammar Gaddafi, and then how is the situation there?
We are fortunate to have been part of the team that went through to Dabia Hospital. At that stage, Dabia Hospital was basically on the rebel side of the front line, and that quickly changed while we were there, and we had to retreat to Benghazi. But the people are strong, the strongest motivation and will I've seen in people for a long time. Really, really united in their quest to get rid of a regime they don't want. I think that universal theme you see throughout Benghazi, Sabia, Brega, and so I think it was good to see that inspiration, because it's inspirational to us as well. So we went there to help them, but we got a bit of enrichment in that interaction.
But that's not the risk.
Well, it is a war zone, so it's always a risk.
No, thank you, because we're worried about you. Because I've seen when they killed somebody, they say that it's a traitor from Nigeria. Mm-hmm. Then and South Africa at that time had just voted with the other countries. Then in a war zone like that, you don't care whether it's South Africa, but if they voted with the people to dethrone your own leader, and then you just even take them too. So it was an uncomfortable situation there. But thanks very much. I just wanted to hear. But Doc, we have requested you from outside, yes, usual, to critically talk to the issues that are very pertinent to your heart. Is the budget for sport transforming the sport in this country? You and I, and then I think with many, we're coming from a history of a very difficult situation. I remember in the Loftus Society, in that demonstration, and then I was in the bath that time with the VIPs in that demonstration, but I felt that I can't be with the VIPs and the people are demonstrating outside there, and then I requested the bus to stop at the gate and drop me there. It was not a nice thing, and then the insults that were coming out of the bus was there to all the people who were demonstrating there around the non-transformation of rugby in particular at the, was it Loftus Society? Yeah, it was Loftus Society. It was not a nice thing. But we want you to talk to us around this budget. The ideal situation, and this is going to be the 16th or 17th year that we've been doing the budget. In the view of you as the ordinary community people who don't have interest in the federation, who don't have interest in school sport, who don't have anything, but who have a broad interest of development and change in this country, what are your views around this? And then you always have a provoking, serious thought on us around this. And I like when you hit also that team. You know, there's another team in KwaZulu-Natal. You remember that team? And then I like when you hit them hard also on that quasi, you call that development of theirs, the quasi development that they are having down there. So. But today there is another gentleman who purports to be the deputy president of that federation. So I want you to tread a little bit careful, and then and not divulge the essence of your input. But all the same, thank you very much, Doc, for coming. Thanks.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. I will say carefully, I've been to a war zone, so I've experienced in being careful. It's been almost 5 years since I first interacted with this committee in Parliament. And some things have changed, and a lot hasn't changed, unfortunately, sadly enough. But today I'm going to really speak to two issues which I think are small enough to be influenced pretty easily when you're planning financial spend. And so I've just concentrated purely on that, on those two issues. The first issue is going to be basically black club rugby, where it is at and where it is going. The second issue is around, it's a more a difficult issue to explain, but it's around organizations and people who have an affinity and affiliation and a love for rugby, but who don't toe the line, the mainstream line, and how these people are dealt with by rugby mainstream. Mr. Chair, I have to apologize to you because in the last 18 months, also, besides spending some time in war zones, I have had to be slightly quieter than I usually am. And you would have noticed that. And there is a reason behind that, and I think I want to express my views on what happened in the last 18 months, because I think it's an important glimpse into the mechanics and the mechanisms which rugby operates. As you know, I'm involved in an organization called the Transformation and Anti-Racism Rugby Committee. I just want to give you a brief understanding of this organization, whose vision is to optimize the participation, the involvement, and the ownership by previously disadvantaged communities in the playing, the administration, the management, and support of rugby in Southern Africa. And basically formed by black rugby playing clubs from across the country who want to address common issues that face them, which are unique issues compared to clubs playing in largely white suburbs. The two key issues, obviously, one is racism and one is the lack of transformation in rugby. There is...
Dr. Bharat, I'm going to interject to you. The minister is putting forward a view of the discussion around transformation. We want you to put a view of the transformation in your own view and say, when we're talking about transformation, what is this that we're talking about? And share with this member so that we are enriched by another view of the transformation, because people who look at the transformation would say transformation is not about a color issue. But I would argue that the racism was on color, and the erosion of racism must also be on color, because you can't say, Prof. Doc, it was white, it was colored, it was Indian, and black people. The correction of those levels, you say, close your eyes, correct them in any way. You don't do that. You go to those who are on the rock bottom by their color, by their oppression, by their standing. Then you bring them back to the first line, and then so that at least you are beginning to say those who were on the rock bottom on basis of their color. People want to trivialize the issue of the color and say it's not about the color. Apartheid was on the color. It was not on any other thing else. Apartheid was on the color, and that color transcends to land, to economy, to everything. But it was about the color. If you are not white enough, you could not be allowed to go anywhere. So I want you, your view, to give us a view around the issues of transformation, because that debate, the ministers open up the nice debates around, let us discuss openly about the transformation and say, what are our people's understanding about the transformation?
Thanks for the direction, Comrade Chair. I've never been apologetic about discussing the demographic situation, because I agree with your sentiment. And unfortunately, within rugby circles, there is that move to say, let us look at people and let us look at the numbers and the quotas and the figures. And it's sadly, I'm going to come back to how that works at club level. It comes back to bite rugby, because at the end of the day, it's glaringly obvious for when you're looking at the situation that, in fact, in terms of black rugby, we've gone backwards. So just to come back, TARC was then basically formed to highlight these issues of racism, because we had seen racism, the blunt edge of racism on the field at club level, with Soweto Rugby, where I'm involved. So the objectives of the organization was really to ensure that people from all race groups and social backgrounds, and that's critically important, because the issue really was that apartheid had influenced your social circumstances to such an extent that today we still have the continued effects of that. To enjoy equal opportunities to participate in the game of rugby, we don't have that at this present moment in time. To transform the game of rugby at every level, and that's another issue that we often miss in terms of transformation, is that we look at on the field and we fail to look at off the field, where transformation is sadly worse in certain circumstances. And to ensure that individuals are protected from racism, which somehow seems to be used within rugby circles to exclude, to vilify, etc. And it's actually tolerated to a higher level than it is in other sectors of society. And then obviously to market the game of rugby in previously disadvantaged communities, etc. the reason was that talk had become really a little bit of a thorn in the side of SA Rugby. And what happened was that our affiliation through Soweto Rugby with the GLRU, there was a plot that was hatched really by the union to destabilize Soweto Rugby. I'm going to be open about it on record because this is exactly what happened. Through the use of, and this is the problem we have in rugby, is that you have a club that's affiliated to a union, and the power is centralized at the union, and the club has to go to the union for basic needs of existence. And the union employs, for example, developmental officers that work within the club, and in fact cherry-pick people to be employed with the union. So it's very easily in that relationship, the David Goliath relationship that we have, for them to use that power to destabilize clubs. It's not only happened in Soweto Rugby, I can promise you, it's happened all over the country. But in Soweto Rugby, they destabilized the club to such an extent that there was an actual coup d'etat, if you want, where they took over the management of the club. After 12 months of strategic planning, we have reversed that process. And today we have got back to the situation where we're in control of that club. And the rationale behind destabilizing with the club was that my involvement with TARC would then be questioned, because then I wouldn't have the base to say I am from a specific club. In any effect, that has been negated. I'm happy to say today. We are in the process at the moment of developing a plan for Soweto schools that will make Soweto school project the largest rugby project in the country, if not in the world, because we will have the largest number of school kids playing rugby than any other geographic location anywhere in the world. So the tides are changing, but it's because really of the commitment of a few people that this has happened. But if you look at the demographic transformation, and if you have to go and look at, I unfortunately haven't had the time to present that to you today because I've just come back, but it would be interesting to see again, compared to when we first did the breakdown in 2006, 5 years later, what the actual change. And there's very little change in terms of actual demographic differences. So, I always say that basically, if you're looking at the demographics, you need to ask yourself, and remember that you're looking at it now in 2011. It's not 1992, it's 2011. So we're 19 years post-unity, and we still have a disaster in terms of the inequalities that we see. And that, on the face of having a transformation charter in rugby for the last, I don't know how many years, which tells you a lot about the transformation charter or the desire to implement. So basically, two issues that I want to highlight that are very, very simple for this committee and for this institution to grasp onto, and that can have everlasting change for black rugby. One is, we need support in terms of black rugby clubs in the township. If you looked at 1992, in Soweto there was up to 16 clubs playing rugby in 1992. In 2011, you got one club. What happened? They asked that the clubs be amalgamated, and in the process weakened the clubs and destroyed the clubs. So you've had a reverse of what should have been happening. So in terms of transformation, it's actually been a disaster to amalgamate the superior, resourced, white federation with the under-resourced black federation. Because what has happened is they just swallowed up the federation. And that has continued, that legacy has continued even up to today. So instead of supporting black clubs, we've gone the other way. So my question to this committee is, how do we support, and it's quite easy to do because black rugby clubs have a tradition. And what I would like to forward today to you is that we start with just a tournament that is supported by the Department of Sports, by an annual Easter tournament, which is very much in the culture and the history of black rugby, to support this tournament on a national level so that we get black rugby clubs together in the same place and promote camaraderie and promote the history and the legacy that they have, the rich history that we're losing. Now, it's quite a simple thing, actually. And if I'm looking at your sports and rec budget, it really goes across all the purposes, across all the programs, because in terms of administration, management, and development of people in terms of managing services, in terms of support services, in terms of mass participation, in terms of international events, well, it's an event, and it could become an international event if it's done correctly. Facilities coordination, so it speaks to all the aims of the budget. And it really is a simple step that we can take. I don't know about how that goes on from here in terms of the budget, et cetera, and the procedures. But if we can get that off the ground, we've already stopped the process of decay that we have in our townships in terms of rugby. Now, the second thing is really the more difficult concept, because it speaks to how rugby interacts with people. And I've said this and I presented this previously to this committee, that if they don't agree with you, you've got no chance of ever influencing or being part of their organization. And that's a fact that they've managed to put up in bold writing across their charters, because they make an example of people. And we see that in Soweto Rugby. I can give you examples of that where in other township clubs where they would pick a person because he's the Yabas mentality. And somebody with any other different ideology or thinking is sidelined completely. It's happening today in 2011. And rugby uses that modus operandi to remain controlled, to remain completely white dominated. That is an intentional way of functioning. So the second concept is how do we collect this group of people who have a love for rugby, who would love to be involved in rugby, but who have been sidelined in this regard. And that I'm leaving a little bit more open because I don't have all the answers for that question. But maybe to support a structure or stroke union type organization that allows freedom of choice in terms of joining that organization. That's allowed, and it's probably one of its key functions would be to protect the integrity of people when it comes to being abused in the rugby situation. So I think my plea today is quite different to previous presentations and pleas with you, were much more complicated and long-winded. And the plea is really very simple. Is let us start with a national Easter tournament for black rugby clubs. This has been a request that I've received from numerous clubs. Because at the moment, for us to do that, we have to run to our unions with cap in hand, begging. And You can imagine the consequences to both the intellect and emotion for doing that kind of, having that kind of approach. It really is an unequal situation. So the unions over the years have just taken the resources. It's supposed to be a 50-50 1992 declaration that we're supposed to be equally shared resources. They've kept the resources and used it to their advantage and to keep control. But let us start reversing that, and we're going to reverse that with this tournament, because it'll bring the pride back into to Black Club Rugby. And once you bring the pride back in, you draw in people from across the spectrum to raise their voices and to speak directly to you. I'm going to end my presentation there, because I think I talk too much sometimes.
Thank you, Dr. Borat. Yes, Mackenzie, and then Cora, and Comrade Sugar.
Thanks, Chairperson. Dr. Barrett, yeah. Although on the surface, I can agree with a lot of what you say, but I'm involved in club administration, and I have been for many, many years. So I'd like to comment on some of the things you said. What worries me about your presentation is that you're talking a lot about about a purposeful, and you're painting a broad brush, and you're including a lot of people in that brush, that there's a deliberate attempt by white people to keep blacks or black people and or clubs or players out of the system. I think if I'm reading it correctly, that's what you're saying. I can't talk about other provinces because I'm not involved there, but I can talk about the province that I'm involved in, and believe me, they are not they're not above criticism, and I'm one of my own union's biggest critics in terms of development and in transformation, as the chairperson would know. And I make no apologies about that, and I don't win the popularity contest because of that. But I must just tell you, I'd just like to respond to some of your comments. You can never merge weak clubs. History will tell you, if you merge two weak clubs, you don't make a strong club. A successful merger is born out of two strong entities, not out of two weak entities. That's just human nature. White clubs also do that, by the way, and they fall by the wayside and they disappear. It's not just a black thing. I know you're coming from a different angle, but I'm just saying that. Number two, in Natal, they have a thing called the Friendship Games, which is a black tournament, which has been hosted for many, many years, and the Department of Sports, in fact, does give money towards that. And clubs from Johannesburg, the Cape, Eastern Cape, and KZN, and some country district areas participate. That's in place right now. It's called the Friendship Games. And it's hosted by KZN. The biggest problem for players, black clubs in KZN, because you're right, in KZN, Mr. Chair, the black clubs have shrunk in numbers and cases, and a lot of it is to do with money and coaching. Money, because players need taxis to get from A to B. It's a massive problem. That's a practical reality. That 50% of the grant money they get goes towards taxi fares, and it's a heck of a problem. I accept that. The other problem is that in the black schools, which used to play in the Durban area, I'm just talking about Durban now, is that a lot of the coaches aren't there anymore, and they're not replaced. With the result that on the ground, a lot of those schools that used to contribute significantly to clubs, players of color, are not producing those players. So it is a massive problem, but money is behind it. Regarding Uncle Tom's, in KZN, that you, as you described, the Uncle Tom's. In KZN, there's a transformation team, task team, that's been formed, which is engaging the union on transforming the constitution end up playing Affairs of Rugby in Cape Town. I don't know if you're aware of that. Are you aware of that? Okay. We are in the process of finalizing that document. And I can tell you that we are driving a process that all the sub-unions, which are in the plot lot, in the country areas, we're getting to a situation where there are lack of black numbers there in terms of administrators, but we are putting in firm proposals in place. I don't have time to do it now to get that done. And that's an open-ended, transparent situation. Yes, has it taken 15 years? It has, but we can't talk about the past. We're trying to go forward. The other thing is I have a problem with this tournament of black players only. They happen, but if the roles are reversed and it was a white-only tournament, whether it be tennis, whether it be rugby, football, I don't care what it is. I'm not sure, and I'm, this is my own personal viewpoint, that that's best for transformation. Okay? There are, as I say, in Natal, there is, in KZN, there are the friendship games, and I have no problem with that, and I attend those things. I help raise sponsorship for those things in terms of equipment, in terms of food, sponsors on the day, etc., etc. So we're right behind it. But I must tell you that merging the black clubs into the system is problematic, and I'm not going to shy away from that, and you're quite right. But I'm not sure that it's just one-way traffic, certainly in my province, that you think it is. I just want to finally say that, and unfortunately this gentleman hasn't been here to present to you, but in Zululand we have an Afrikaans gentleman, white guy, who's put together the most progressive transformation package. He owns the Zululand Rugby Academy, and he, with those students, and he's going to present to this committee, and I'd like you to be present at that, because I think it would open your eyes to that there are people in certain areas that are trying very hard on transformation, and that he services something like 687 black schools right now with nutrition, coaching, first aid, playing, where they cannot be reached by the Sharks development program because they don't have the resources. This guy with his own money is servicing those schools in Zululand. And so you're not going to see the fruits of that right now, but you might see that in 5 years or 10 years' time. But it's a massive program. I don't have time to go into it all now, but it involves shipping people, coaching people, getting them to fields, interacting with the teachers, trying to teach the teachers how to do it, etc. It's a massive program. So there are some bright spots. It's not all doom and gloom. There are some bright spots. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just finish off on that note. Thank you.
Thank you, Mackenzie. Cora.
You know, Dr. Barat, you've come to open wounds, man. Really. You know, where I come from, there were something like 8 clubs. And I just want to talk about 4 clubs. But the Perseverance and All Blacks was in the colored area. In Bongoleto there was Pirates and what is this other club? But when those 4 clubs play, you can even have the Springboks they play. The people come flocking to that rugby. And you know, when Kwaru and Western Province played, you can have your Springboks. People go there. It's quite correct what you're saying. After 1992, these clubs were swallowed by these white clubs. And also now you got one club, no two. There's one which is the Ocean Club and the one which is Bristol, which has brought now these colored clubs together. That's why, Comrade Chair, I had this big fight with Saro when they banned Heidelberg. Heidelberg for 15 years. And that is the only sport which you get there in that place. There is no stadium there. People go with their chairs and their crates and they watch rugby. And that's why I took up that fight to its conclusion. Because I was saying that they are killing the youth of that place. You see, it's going to be difficult for us to defend these things because these things are happening. If you can remember this morning, this colleague from Donald Lee's party,
JJ,
You are saying that KwaZulu Natal and these places, they are not developing. If you take Lwazi Mbobo from Transkei, you take him out of there and you bring him to KwaZulu Natal, he's not developing. You are bringing up one person. Why don't you develop there where the people are? Eh? So that's why, you know, we have a problem even in cricket. You can't drop Dumini. Who brings you in if you drop Dumini? So we have to have Dumini there so that he can get his form back. You see, these kind of things, when we talk about them, and more especially when Cora talk about them, they see that there is again. You see? And until we must open such a discussion, Comrade Chair. Because now I support this tournament. I had a big fight in the office of the chairperson when people from Laga came here and this tournament, they wanted to take it somewhere else. And it was 10 for Laga to have that tournament. You will be reviving. During our time, there was no this criminality which is there in the township now. That is because there's nothing they do. They start to drink in the morning from the when they wake up because there is no enjoyment. If they want to watch rugby, they must get a bus to go to town. And from town, there are no buses after the match. And those are the kinds of things which are there. You until such time, we speak to these things. You see, now, my brother, I don't go to these rugby matches. I stay at my place. Because one time I was there, and I was asked by an old man, what do I want here? This is not soccer. Honestly. And I dealt with him there and on the spot. His wife had to drag him out there. And I told him before, I kick you. So really, these things, my brother, I'm happy that you take bring up these things. So that it comes out from other people there. So that it's not just seen that it's only Kora Butana who's doing these things. Yeah, no. No, I support this. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Thank you.
Suga.
It's difficult to speak after Kombi Kora has spoken. He's fired up now. I don't know where to start. But, Chaperson, I must appreciate the input by Dr. Borat. I can see that he's a bit tired. He has just landed. But, you know, because it's our first time for me, for some of us here, to have interacted with yourself. I would like to have a situation where Chaperson, because I like to discuss from a position of informed, to get a discussion paper that will provoke our minds so that we take the discussion forward. You see, because, you know, in the olden days, we used to discuss issues and first define the terminology before we get into the substance, so that we understand each other. For instance, the question of the non-racialism, that's the multiracialism. Are we clarified on those matters? Are we speaking the same thing in terms of the content and the substance of that? For instance, if you speak of, if I divert the unionism vis-à-vis the association, is it the same equation? So I'm saying that we need to define clearly, because as we move forward, in the 21st century, seemingly we are forgetting those basic concepts that will inform our political ideology where we are going to. So now, you were very brief for me because I would want to, I would have loved to hear more on your substantive issues so that we can rekindle our ideology and assist the process forward. That's my appeal to Chairperson. The second issue that you raised, which is very critical, because of the lull or sometimes the absence of sport, especially when you refer to the disadvantaged communities, in particular Africans, where sport was, you are, to me, you are saying let us devise strategies to revive that through tournaments, Easter tournaments. That's what you are saying. And I don't think we can violently object to that. Because there is that
You see, for instance, in the Eastern Cape, I know where I come from, in the metro in particular, PE, you know, there were many outstanding idols or good players in rugby. You know, I'm just thinking off the head, Peter Mkhatu. I think he could have rated among the top three during those days. Now there is a tournament around him, right? To rekindle that sport in schools and so on, in netball, in soccer, and others. So I'm saying this view of having a national tournament, I'm not sure whether you are talking for now, this coming Easter, or you are saying let us prepare towards that. But also, surely, when we prepare for 2012, fortunately, it will coincide with the centenary year of the ruling party's 100 years. So if you can also have some motivation so that when we speak on these platforms, canvas us, so that we also canvas our constituencies about these matters, so that also we talk, because there's a very important client chaperone in the whole equation. If you talk tournaments and sports, the teachers or educators who must buy in what we are raising, so that also we bring back that culture of educators being involved. Look, when I was a teacher, I used to teach for 7-8 hours, but also I was the coach of rugby, playing soccer, all that. There was no money, but for the love of the game, we could produce many stars that we're talking today. So if you can have some kind of a paper to that, towards that also, so that what your vision, let's buy in it, but give us some information, because we might differ in terms of the degrees in understanding what you're talking. I might love rugby and soccer, but next to me, you might love hockey, and it is expected to talk about rugby in the tournament. So we must have those objectives very clearly defined in our mind so that there's no problem. And you see, commercially speaking, you know, commercial people will talk of budget. You can't transform your society without budget. And because a budget is a tool to transform, taking the struggle forward. So on this matter, that's why I was also keen to listen to yourself as to, is this budget of the Department of Sports and Recreation enough to change sports in South Africa, our lifestyle and so on? What are the elements, critical elements that you can ponder so that we influence government to tilt the balance of finances or budget towards sports, so that our life expectancy rate can increase rather than at this point in time, what is it? It's around 53, 55, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm saying we need to have that kind of a scenario. So this thing of writing is also trying to read more about the thinking. I'd be much more happy to check that in. Without saying much, equally with this one of the racism, because if you want to speak of racism, you touch the nerve of this country. It's like wanting to delve around Christianity in South Africa vis-a-vis other matters we can talk about loud. So, through your chairperson, I think if Dr. Borat can give us some ammunition so that you can advance the ideology of the present government, I'll be very much pleased. I've read only once a magazine of yourself. I'm not sure whether you still produce that magazine, or was it just by one-off incident or event? Thank you.
Office of the Minister.
Now, I'd like to welcome the presentation from Dr. Burat, but I just want to raise some issues as a flip point issues that perhaps can assist, because we're in a process of reopening the debate on the transformation in South Africa. Because the minister, when he puts issues on the question, saying that the issue of transformation has been racially polarized in our society, and it has been polarized particularly by the enemies of democracy and enemies of non-racialism. So they use transformation in their own expense as to make sure that they become mercenaries of maintenance than mercenaries of progress and development. In that particular debate, I wanted to ask Dr. what could be his assistance for Parliament and for the Minister of Sport in developing this perspective, this dialogue on sport. One of them is the transformational nature of the quotas itself vis-a-vis a transformational nature of development, grassroots development of the people, as to cover, or as to use that as an opponent and a push factor against the racialization or polarization of transformation as a concept and practice. That is one.
Good.
Secondly, is the question of our interpretation of access for all. What is our fundamental tenet of access for all in sport in relation to the participation for all in sport, using these as tools for transformation, for equality, for equity, and other related, you know, issues that we use. I wanted to follow the member that just spoke. The role of sport economy in fostering transformation. I mean, what is the role of the sport economy in fostering transformation? In the same token, what is the role of the sport economy today in hindering that transformation? Because if we don't get into that crux of the matter, this is what is not going to happen in South Africa. Because it becomes a selfish argument, an argument that wants to maintain an old order, you know, at the expense of development of our country. So I just wanted the perspective on those issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Doc? Thanks, Comrade Chair. There's a lot of issues being raised. Let me start with the first issues. I think I know very well about the challenges facing black rugby clubs in the townships. The issue of transport and having to bus the players around is a critical one. But we ask ourselves, and I hear these stories, I'm a bit younger than most people who were involved in rugby for a long time. And when they speak about black rugby clubs in the past, without having any resources, without having any money, arranging games, playing for the passion of it, what has changed? You know, so we belittle the argument by saying that money is now the major issue. I take exception to a comment that you made that it's an exclusive tournament. When we say have a national Easter tournament from disadvantaged communities, there is nothing wrong with a white player joining Soweto Rugby Club and playing for Soweto Rugby Club. It is not a racially exclusive tournament. The difference is we want a disadvantaged club with its own constraints, with its own challenges, with having to deal with racism, with having to deal with issues that an advantage club doesn't have. Soweto Rugby Club, for example, is not close to any race group from joining. So I think that we must clear quite categorically. The other issue I take exception to is this approach that SA Rugby has and rugby has had for the last 19 years, the ownership of transformation. In that saying, we own transformation, and Afrikaner will be in charge of transformation. So this white guy is doing transformation in this township for the last 15 years. So 19 years of that, what has happened? So 19 years of that, and we continue doing it. When is the point going to come that we say, let us share the transformation load with people who understand the issues maybe better than us? Rather than saying, we will force feed you and tell you how we will get black players playing rugby. It's a change in mindset, really. And this is the same thing that is happening at the union. You have a developmental officer who takes instruction from somebody else. Why is that? Well, why are the black rugby clubs, the disadvantaged rugby clubs, given the opportunity to input into that transformation meaningfully? Why hasn't that happened in 19 years? We're not asking, it's not a question of asking, please, can you help us? That's not what we're asking for. We are saying, allow us to do this. There's a difference. I mean, the issue of the dwindling clubs, the strength that you saw 20 years ago in Black in townships playing rugby compared to now. The passion. Make no mistake, when we had the unity of sport and you had an unequal playing field, white clubs could select. I mean, our previous coach, Soweto Rugby, is somewhere in your province, coaching somewhere. So, what happens? They suck. There's a vacuum, one-way vacuum. They're sucking what they want out of the infrastructure and resources of a club. It's taken 20 or 30 years to build. You ask, where the coaches gone? Where have they gone? A lot of them have been pulled into the advantage club scenario. So it still isn't an equal playing field. To raise an important issue is related to that is, for example, the Golden Lions Rugby Union. 19 years of transformation, millions have been spent every year on development of rugby in black areas. Have they produced a single Gauteng-born player that has played for the Lions? 19 years, not a single player. I mean, how do you explain that? I can't. Sometimes you find millions of rand spent. And then they pull a player from the Eastern Cape or they pull a player from somewhere. There's not development. That's hijacking players. So what is the actual development plan in a province like the Lions? I agree with the input for the call for discussion paper and to unpack further issues. It obviously takes a lot more time, but that's something we can look at. In terms of the budget for transformation, maybe sometimes we expect the transformation to occur as a natural attrition, but it isn't natural for many people. I mean, I see that. I mean, if you walk into a room and there's only Afrikaner people in the room, in a rugby meeting, and no one bats an eyelid, there's no realization that there's something wrong with this. You know, some people don't see that way. They don't, it doesn't factor in that there's a question. So it's not something that's going to change naturally. You need to have intervention for it to change. There has to be positive intervention. Whether we can discuss the different implementation tools that you can use, but there has to be some, because we've been through a traumatic history. And just to walk away from that history and say, now all fair, equal opportunity, everyone do, you're fine. I mean, it's naive. I think so. I think it's very naive. I'm glad there is a reopening of the debate. I'm really glad to hear that. Because for the better part of the last 5 years, there has been, Comrade Chair will, I'm sure, agree, there's been muffled noises from the ministry. In fact, this committee has been more at the forefront than the Minister of Sport. And I say that openly. So I'm glad to hear that there is that review, that the debate needs to be reopened. There needs to be a debate on quotas. There needs to be a debate on the demographics. We cannot walk away saying our job is done when clearly it isn't. Quotas, it's always going to be a hot potato at the national level, at the national team, on the field. It's always going to be a hot potato. But what about quotas in boardrooms? What about quotas with medical staff? What about quotas with coaches, with referees? What about quotas there? We've forgotten that. Because if we transform that, if we transform the boardroom, I guarantee you the players we don't have to worry about. So maybe our focus is wrong. Maybe our focus needs to be off place. Because I can tell you from a union in Johannesburg that the war room is the biggest problem. That's where your mindset has not changed.
Yeah. Thanks, Comrade Poland. Thanks very much. No, you are right. When you talk about transformation doesn't, it's not a voluntary aspect. Nobody who has been sitting next to heaven and others basking in hell, then you say to them, come and take my heaven and live away from hell. It will never happen. It will never happen. That is the painful reality of change. Transformation is change. We can call it transformation or whatever we term it, but the essence of what this country is endowed with and that this country sadly neglected is change. It's change, Comrade Poland. When you speak about access for all, it is not participation for all. It's not. If you could say participation for all, then it rekindles access for all. But when you say that, no, it's access for everybody, you can all go and be there and be the spectator. But the participation on the real issues, that makes every one of us very excited about Chili Boy, Ralipele, about Grime, about everyone. That's where the whole thing lies. But the issue of the transformation is a painful thing. But we have to be content and talk about it. And then we must not just put it on the carpet as if it's nothing. Issues of women in this country, who were in the periphery, it will not be by prayer. I want any priest to pray and say women are going to be affirmed, and therefore, and close our eyes and pray and say amen. We will find women still at the rock bottom of life, being the sewers of wood, and it is them who are going to look after our cattle. But the boardroom, if the boardroom says women have to be part of us in the boardroom, and open that door and deliberately bring them, and you must orientate them, then you will see that women are going to be part of that. It's not a voluntary thing. It's not going to happen just for a bishop of the Anglican to pray. It's not going to happen in that way. Now, when you raise that matter, Dr. Borat and myself know, when you talk about the role of economy in transforming the society and sport, how critical it is, the role of economy in hindering or retarding the transformation of the society and sport. It's a big thing. Let me give you an example. In the midst of a battle, where any website, you can go and check there. I'll show you even my you can go to my Google and check there. It says that Compeller is misplaced. He was supposed to be a security guard at the airport. You'll see, if you want to Google, you can go and check there. It's because we're talking about something that agitates our white people in this country, and where those were the issues of the matter of life and death, and we were prepared to go to the altar about them. Let me tell you what happened. So, on the midst of appointment of Peter de Villiers, Sasso says, if it is Peter de Villiers who's the coach, we withdraw from sponsoring the national team. Sponsors, economy, wants to determine who should be the coach. Peter de Villiers has not gone to a shadow to be whiter enough for him to coach that national team. Then we said to them, you know what, Sasso, and the Sasso is speaking through our own comrade. Sasso, the spokesperson for Sasso, was one of our own comrades. He's sitting there surrounded by the right wing and say, no, we think Sasol is going to withdraw if Peter de Villiers can be appointed as a coach. We still need Jake White. And what do you think that the economy or the sponsors were helping us to transform this society. We're cutting the progress. And then he said to the minister, Minister, we're ready to go down. If Sasol has to go, let it go now. But we're not going to abandon that stand. You recall, Borat, it was a battle in the country. Second, as we speak now, the HFB and the MRA are saying the 7th series must go to Cape Town. From George to Cape Town. It's economy determining where the sport should be and then how it should be played. So what you're raising is a very, 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 very critical thing on how destructive the economy could be. Instead of, by and large, 90% of the time, those who have means of economy are destructive. I have not seen 90% of them being constructive, but at least there's 10% that are a little bit constructive in assisting us to develop this sport. I am giving you evidence that is alive, and then you will see. Now, Comrade Borat, Comrade Sugar, say, this budget, this is what he says, say, all the elements of this budget, following them and they mention them, implemented correctly, they can make a change. Because he's saying there is a relay on the elements that he has mentioned there. He said everything that we want to have that is going to help us to move from where we are to a change, it is there within that budget. But the will to go in the direction in which those elements are is another thing. For us to go that direction is another thing. But the replacement, the placement of those elements and how they talk to each other is a perfect, ideal situation in which we can make changes in this country. But for us, is how do we really deal with those issues in a manner that transcends to the change of this country. That's where the biggest problem is. That's what Borat is saying. I want to say we need to check carefully on this Easter tournament of a festival of rugby, school rugby, throughout, not obliterating any white school. But target would be, let's go to those who are not necessarily on the front of this sport called rugby in Soweto. If we have to go to Sandton, let's go to Sandton. If we've got to go in Umlaas, let's go to Umlaas and pick up those. If we go to a suburb, let's do those kind of things. But it is correct that we must have this school. Now, where I want to say, Comrade McKenzie, I think I've been involved in sports for some time, from the 85. What you're saying at times is correct, but by and large, it is not used in the manner you're saying it. Say, the bigger federation, matching them with weaker federation, it is an enhanced this small federation to develop and at some stage, and then they had to break because you have carried this child and grow him and assist him, and then now he's up and running. No, at times, in 90% of the time, that doesn't happen. It becomes a way of saying, we have 16 black clubs, and let us merge them, and they must take all top players in the 16 teams, and we must form one team, and then and there should be one other team at this side. But they don't say, even in our white teams, all the 10 white teams, let us pick up top players and have one team, and then in the other side must have one team. No. You have to dissolve all your teams and have one team. And you know what happened to that one team? And it is not about, let me tell you, it's not about the essence of wanting to assist in development, Comrade Marquez. It's about numbers. It's about numbers in the boardroom. You must check those people that are doing those things. They say, if clubs are 16, black clubs are 16, when you go to a meeting there, They are going to take over that meeting and they are going to run this asset. And therefore, let's have a way of giving the resources to them and say, here are resources, 2 million rand, but you have to merge and form one big club. You know, Makem, a sad part about me as a black person, as soon as you put the 2 million rand here, I abandon the cause and forget everything and go for the 2 million rand, and all these other people are convinced that it's the right thing for us to close doors and have one team. I'm telling you the gospel truth. I'm not lying to you. I'm telling you the gospel truth. But later, there are huge unintended consequences where I regret and say, by the way, by closing doors was a mistake, because this asset is now taking over. It is even now further than where it was next to Soweto. It has gone to something, and then nobody will ever get it again. The rationale on the merge was that. But one thing that I want to ask from you, Ekumit Borat, during the unity talks, do you think there was a very serious thought on us on the unity talks at the time when we were uniting the sports in this country? Did we have a thought of a huge resistance after 1998 to 1990 up until today? Because coming back from Lusaka, briefed, energy was there. Everybody wanted to move in that direction. But immediately when the unity talks were concluded, do you think, was it the right thing for us to can go to that direction? Or we're supposed to have been remain as the National Sports Council or SACOS, whatever those social movement were, and remain as they are, so that at least we must push this course, and today it could have been a different thing.
Comrade Chair, it's always better with hindsight, but clearly in 1992 there was a euphoria, and also there was a willingness to accept reconciliation from the other side. And that probably blinded us in the sense that we expected there to be fair play, but there wasn't. It would have been better, because at that time you had the upper hand in terms of bargaining, in terms of sports. It would have been better to have asked for a lot more. But in terms of fairness, we expected the same from the other side, and a lot of compromises were made that should never have been made. There needed to be unity, yes. I don't think that we can argue with. But we needed to be on an equal footing. We didn't realize that we were not on that footing.
The last point, Dr. Borat, I am going to raise this on the debate. I want you, as an ordinary citizen of this country, and say the honest opinion to the people that you come across in Soweto, in the KwaZulu-Natal and elsewhere. 17 years of freedom. What do they say about the kind of the ideal sport that we wanted to have of non-racialism and the boycotts that we put in place? What are they saying to you? Because I just want to imagine what is in their mind about us being in government and day to day we are sitting in a pool of honeymoon of non-racial society. Everything has been in place. Just tell me, what are people thinking about?
Comrade Chair, I'm unable to give you that answer because it was me losing my dignity here. There is very, very great sadness and frustration and anger on the part of many people in the townships with regards to sport. There is anger because they feel that they have been excluded, forgotten, if you like. Forgotten is probably the right word. By this government, by the ruling party, by the minister. That, for example, in a classic example in terms of rugby, I mean, I generally talk rugby with people. That's something I like to do, to find out, you know, what's your feeling of rugby, etc. And the feeling you get is that it is a white sport still. You might get a different feeling if you go to a Model C school or you go to a private school. Obviously, you will. But the majority of people are not in that situation. The majority of people are in our townships, and this is what they're saying. So there is a great deal of frustration, a great deal of almost hopelessness about the situation. But I always say to them that we need to stand up to take control of that. Because if we sit down and do nothing, then we get nothing.
I'm asking you the last question of the DA. If Honorable Lee was here, I was going to say, yes, what is your notion, Dr. Borat, on the transformation retarded by lack of facility as an aspect that makes the transformation not to be there in the country? Just tell me your views on that. Is that a legitimate argument? And then, or it's part, the issues of facilities become part of the transformation process, because now it is that put facility first, because it becomes a catalyst for the transformation. I just want to hear to you as sports people and then outside there, what is your view?
I think we must always be careful with isolating one factor alone, because often it is multiple factors. Facilities, yes, if you don't have facilities, you can't play. But you can have facilities and then no one to coach and no one to provide the nutrition and no one to provide the expertise. It's always a multiple factors together. If you look at facilities in the townships for rugby, I mean, Soweto has one field that doesn't have a stadium. It has a field. That's for 4 million people in Soweto. So facilities is a huge issue. I'm talking rugby. I'm not talking soccer. Obviously, it's a different story. But I assume with cricket, when you've got one stadium at least, cricket is better than rugby. So facility is definitely a crucial starting point, but it must never be seen as the answer on its own, because you still have the politics of rugby that's preventing the usage of facilities, of expanding and capacity building in these areas.
Thank you, Dr. Barat. Thanks. I have ambushed you from Libya, but I always get a pleasure in a crude reminder of ourselves. Suka is right. We need people who are discussing honestly and open like ourselves and remind us and say where we're sitting on our lives, coaches. We must know that in other people, it is not as nice as we are sitting there. But thank you very much for coming. Honourable members, this brings us to the end of our budget review. But it's a real mouthful that the report, Pori will do the report. But I just want to remind you that on the 29th, on Tuesday next week, as the first day of handling the petition of the Athletic South Africa, those people that felt that the matter of Athletic South Africa was not handled properly, and therefore that petition, we start kicking it on a Tuesday next week. There are people that have been called to come and give a verbal presentation to the portfolio committee around that, and then we know that the committee will have these public hearings, and then at the end we deliberate and make decisions, and the report goes to Parliament, and the Minister would implement whatever recommendation we are giving to the Minister on the findings that we have in as far as Athletic South Africa is concerned. So be ready, and then there's another wave that is coming, the tsunami. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.